Welcome back to Run the List, a medical education podcast in partnership with McGraw-Hill Medical. Our hosts are Dr. Naveen Kumar, Dr. Walker Redd, Dr. Emily Gutowski, Dr. Joyce Au, and myself, Blake Smith. As a quick disclaimer, this podcast is meant for informational and educational purposes only and should not be understood as medical advice under any circumstances.
Welcome to Run the List. My name is Joyce Au, and I'm here once again with Dr. Alexis A.C. Gomez, who is our return renal guest discussant for the third and final time. We spoke about hypo and hypernatremia in our previous episodes, and today we're switching gears to talking about acid-base disturbances. Dr. Gomez, as many of you know, is a med-peds-trained nephrology fellow in the combined Mass General Hospital, Brigham and Women's, and Boston Children's Hospital renal program, and she's a big bean enthusiast and medical educator, and we're super excited to have her here with us today. Welcome, Dr. Gomez.
Thank you for having me back, and I have to say, I love the alliteration of big bean enthusiast, and I think it's going to be how I'm going to start answering the phone. So I think on nights this week, I'm going to be like, hey, it's AC, big bean enthusiast, how can I help you?
AC, big bean enthusiast, we're going to kick this off with a case as usual. We have Ms. B, who is a 57-year-old female with a history of hypertension, alcohol use disorder, and chronic pancreatitis. She presents with subacute jaundice, vomiting, abdominal discomfort, as well as an inability to tolerate POs. She's febrile, she has a heart rate up to the 110s, a blood pressure of 94 over 66, and she's satting 99% on room air. Labs are notable for a BMP with a bicarb of 16, an anion gap of 30, a lactate of 7, and a venous blood gas or VBG with a pH of 7.33, PCO2 of 25. Her LFTs are notable for a direct hyperbilirubinemia, and imaging is notable for a mass at the head of the pancreas, which is concerning for a pancreatic cancer that is causing biliary obstruction and cholangitis. Dr. Gomez, there's a lot happening here medically, but I want to point out that the acid-base labs are particularly deranged. Specifically, you see a low pH, a low bicarb, a high anion gap, as well as a low PCO2. Can you talk me through what you consider to be acid-base disorders and what are the big categories of these problems?
Absolutely. So acid-base disorders are disorders in your acid generation and buffering, and they can lead to an abnormality in your pH, which matters for enzymatic function. In general, we tend to keep our pH regulated between 7.35 and 7.45, but there are a couple things that can throw this off. When I think of acid-base disorders, I think of a couple big classes or divisions. The first is whether the disorder is respiratory or metabolic. So for metabolic, you can have an abnormal level of acid generation and issues with the kidney and excreting acid or buffering it. And for this, we'll want to look at the bicarb number on our BMP, which is typically around 24. For a respiratory disorder, it means you're having trouble with breathing off or retaining too much carbon dioxide. And for this, we'll want to look at the PCO2 on a blood gas, with normal being around 40. The other big division is whether you have an acidosis or an alkalosis, meaning what is the direction of the derangement. And these can result in an acidemia, meaning a blood pH of less than 7.35, or an alkalemia, meaning a pH of greater than 7.45. Although you can have an acidosis or an alkalosis without having an acidemia or an alkalemia. So your big categories with these divisions are respiratory acidosis, a respiratory alkalosis, a metabolic acidosis, and a metabolic alkalosis. And you can have multiple of these derangements at once, although you can only have one respiratory derangement at a time.
Excellent. I appreciate this last point that you make that is a key language aspect, which is that emias describe the pH changes in the blood, so acidemia and alkalemia, whereas osis, so alkalosis or acidosis, expresses the disorder. So for instance, as you mentioned, you can have an acidemia despite having both processes causing acidosis and alkalosis. Now, can we turn towards some of the common causes of these disorders?
Yeah, so starting with our respiratory disorders, a respiratory acidosis usually means you have a buildup of too much carbon dioxide, meaning you have decreased ventilation. So here you'd want to think about things that can cause hypoventilation, such as obstructive or restrictive lung diseases, obesity hypoventilation syndrome, central causes of hypoventilation or decreased respiratory drive, and neuromuscular disorders. Then a respiratory alkalosis is just the opposite. So here you want to think about things that increase your respiratory rate and therefore your ventilation, like anxiety and pain. And interestingly, pregnancy can also cause a respiratory alkalosis. Then we go to our metabolic disorders, which are my personal favorite. So first we have a metabolic acidosis, which can be due to increased intake or production of acid, Or it can be an issue with the kidney, meaning you're not excreting acid or you're losing bicarb, which is what buffers that acid. And here we also have another subdivision, which are our anion gap acidoses and our non-anion gap acidoses. Then we have metabolic alkalosis, and common causes here include vomiting, contraction alkalosis, and diuretic use. Ian, you can also have ingestions in this category. Baking soda in particular comes to mind as one where I've seen a profound metabolic alkalosis from an ingestion.
I don't know how often you see baking soda ingestions, but that is something that I have not thought too much about. You mentioned the AGMAs and the NAGMAs, so the anion gap metabolic acidosis and the non-anion gap metabolic acidoses. Can you tell us a little bit more about these two categories?
Yeah, so whenever you have a metabolic acidosis, you have that other big division that you just mentioned, which is the anion gap versus the non-anion gap acidoses. So first of all, the concept of the anion gap stems from the fact that when you sum up anions and cations, everything should be net neutral. So to calculate our anion gap, you subtract the bicarbon chloride from the sodium, and normal's roughly 10 to 12. And this is due to the fact that you have other unmeasured anions like lactate, albumin, phosphate, etc. So if you have an anion gap, you want to think about things that increase your unmeasured anions. And for non-anion gap metabolic acidosis, you want to think about things that increase chloride or cause you to lose bicarb or have trouble excreting acid without increasing the things that contribute to your anion gap. So for non-anion gap acidosis, you'd want to think about causes like normal saline infusions, loss of bicarb from the GI tract from diarrhea, or things like your RTAs. We don't need to go into the specific RTAs here, don't worry, but remember that generally they can cause a non-gap acidosis from loss of bicarb, because remember, almost all of it should be reabsorbed, or they can cause it with difficulty excreting acid by the kidney. If you have an anion gap acidosis, it means you need to be thinking about other non-accounted for anions. And here you have your mnemonics that we all know and love. So you may have learned mud piles in medical school, I know I did, but many are shifting to the gold mark mnemonic. So out with the dirty old mud piles mnemonic and in with a shiny new one. So here, G is for your glycols, O is for oxaproline, L is for L-lactate, D is for D-lactate, M is for methanol, A is for aspirin, R is for renal failure, and K is for ketoacidosis. It's like the worst children's book ever.
Great. So Goldmark. So now help us figure through some labs and how we can use labs to help determine our acid-base disorder. Dr. Gomez, what is your approach?
So I go through all acid-base disorders with the same method every time. And I find that this way, no matter how complicated they may seem, I can always break them down and understand. So generally, and I'll dive more into these, but your steps are, number one, do you have an acidemia or an alkalemia? Two, is your primary disturbance metabolic or respiratory? Three, do you have an anion gap or not? Four, what's your expected compensation? And five, if you have an anion gap acidosis, what's your delta-delta? So the first thing to look at is the pH. Is there an acidemia, meaning a pH of less than 7.35, or an alkalemia, meaning a pH of greater than 7.45, or a normal pH? Then the next thing is to figure out the primary disorder. So if you have an acidemia, do you have a respiratory acidosis, meaning that you have a high PCO2 on your blood gas, or a metabolic acidosis, meaning a low bicarb on your BNP or blood gas? So remember that you can have mixed or multiple disorders, but if you have an acidemia, your primary is always going to be an acidosis. And if you have an alkalemia, then your primary disorder should always be an alkalosis. Next, anytime you have a metabolic acidosis, you want to check to see if you have an anion gap or a non-gap acidosis. Then you want to figure out what your expected compensation should be for your primary disorder. So each disorder has an expected compensation, and we'll list them in a table that you can refer to, or you can always look them up, I promise, like in that table. But probably the one that people most commonly remember is Winter's formula, and it's probably the one that most commonly comes up. So this is your formula for expected compensation for a metabolic acidosis. Here, you take your bicarb, multiply it by 1.5, then you add 8 to this number, and then take plus or minus 2 to get a range. And this should be your expected PCO2 on your gas. There are other formulas or expected changes for all of your other primary disorders as well. But conceptually, the important thing to remember is to calculate what your expected compensation would be for your primary disorder, and then figure out if you have an additional derangement beyond that. So as an example, let's say that you have a primary metabolic problem and you calculate your expected compensation, but your actual PCO2 on your gas is higher than you'd expect. That means that you have an additional respiratory acidosis because you're retaining more carbon dioxide than you would have thought. If it's lower than expected, then you have an additional respiratory alkalosis. Similarly, if you have a primary respiratory process and your bicarb is lower than expected, you have an additional metabolic acidosis. And if it's higher than expected, you have a metabolic alkalosis. And then lastly, when you went to figure out if you have a GAP or a non-GAP acidosis, if you have an anti-GAP acidosis, then you'll want to calculate your delta-delta and figure out if there's another metabolic process going on.
Great. So you mentioned the delta-delta, which I think is something that has historically confused many learners. It is specifically when you know you have a metabolic acidosis, but need to examine to see if it's an AGMA, a NAGMA, whether there's a metabolic alkalosis component or some combination of all of these things. Can you tell me a little bit more about how you approach the delta-delta, what it is and how you think about it?
Yeah, so I think this is definitely the part in figuring out an acid-base disorder that probably trips the most people up. So let's get into it. And here we're actually going to get into one of my personal favorite nephrology nerd wars, which, as a side note, I maintain that the best way to start a fight amongst nephrologists is to casually ask them how much water a person should drink in a day. But this is not that war. This is between the believers in the delta-delta, meaning the dividers, and the subtractors. So I personally am a subtractor as I find it more intuitive, but it does have some limitations. Generally though, I find that it works, so let's go through it. If you have an anion gap of say 24 and normal is 10, then what you want to do is subtract the expected or normal anion gap, so 10, from your patient's anion gap. So in this case, 24 minus 10 would be 14. Then let's say that they have a bicarb of 10. If you kind of took their anion gap acidosis away, meaning that you brought their anion gap down to 10, you'd bring their bicarb up to 24. And so you would not have a non-gap acidosis or an alkalosis. You only have your gap acidosis. Now, let's say instead that they have the same gap, meaning 24, but they only have a bicarb of 15. So if you took their anion gap acidosis away and brought the gap down to 10, your bicarb would now be 29. So you have a concomitant metabolic alkalosis. And if your starting bicarb were, say, 4, and you took the gap acidosis away, meaning, again, you brought your gap down from 24 to 10 and added 14 to your bicarb, then in this case, 4 plus 14 would be 18, so you'd have an additional non-anion gap acidosis on top of that. Again, there are some limitations here, but I overall love this method and find it a little more intuitive than the delta-delta. That being said, if you happen to be a division person or a delta-delta person, it's pretty much the same concept. So what you're looking for is the change in the anion gap, meaning how far above normal it is. If that's much lower than your change in bicarb, meaning how far below normal your bicarb is, then your delta-delta is going to be less than 1. And that means that you have a gap and a non-gap acidosis. If it's much higher, that means you have a gap acidosis and a metabolic alkalosis. And if it's roughly similar with some wiggle room, then it's a pure anion gap acidosis.
Awesome. It's funny because I was always taught the ratio, but I think intuitively what you're doing is essentially what we're doing in our brain, which is thinking about how much the bicarb should change based on how much extra unmeasured anion exists based on the anion gap. So specifically for the delta-delta ratios, the numbers that we look at include a ratio of 1:2 being a pure AGMA, a ratio of greater than 2 being an AGMA plus something that's causing greater bicarb, such as a metabolic alkalosis or compensation for a respiratory acidosis, and a ratio of less than 1 tends to reflect a combined AGMA and NAGMA, as you had mentioned. One of the notes that I wanted to make is that I was always confused why a ratio of 1:2 was still considered to be a pure AGMA and isn't quite the 1:1 ratio that we had discussed in terms of our intuitive logic. And I think this is because the buffering of protons occurs not just in the blood itself, but also intracellularly. Yet what you measure for the anion gap, so for instance, a lactate, is charged and stays for the most part extracellular. So this is why the delta and delta allows for ratios up to 2. So even up to a 2 2-point change in the anion. So for instance, a 2-point change in lactate can sometimes only drop the bicarb by 1 point inside the blood because there is this intracellular buffering as well. Now let's turn to applying this approach to our patient. So as a reminder, her labs included an anion gap of 30, a bicarb of 16, and a VBG with a pH of 7.33 and a PCO2 of 25. Can you tell me a little bit more about how you would apply this schema?
Yeah, so here, let's remember that we're just going to go through those same five steps again. So just to reiterate, number one, do you have an acidemia or alkalemia? Two, is it metabolic or respiratory? Three, do you have an anion gap or not? Four, what's your expected compensation? And five, if you have an anion gap acidosis, do you have another metabolic disorder on top of that? So first, we're going to look at our pH, and we can see that it's below 7.35, so she has an acidemia. Next, her bicarb is low, and her PCO2 is low. If it were a primary respiratory process causing an acidemia, we'd expect a high PCO2. But if it were a primary metabolic process causing an acidemia, we would expect a low bicarb. So we know it's not a primary respiratory process, and we know it's a primary metabolic acidosis. Next, we're going to check our anion gap. So if you look at our anion gap, which as you mentioned is 30, it's clear that she has an anion gap acidosis, and then we'll check later to see if she has another metabolic process as well. Just thinking about causes of her gap, it could be from her lactate, although that's a larger gap than I'd expect from just a lactate of 7. So I'd also be checking for your other causes of gap acidosis as well, especially for a ketoacidosis in this case. Next, we'll look for compensation. So if we use Winter's formula, which we talked about before, and which is listed in the tables provided, then 1.5 times 16 is 24, 24 plus 8 is 32, and then we add our wiggle room of plus or minus 2, which gives us a range of 30 to 34. But if you remember, her PCO2 is 25, which is lower than we would expect. So in addition to our anion gap acidosis, she also has a respiratory alkalosis. In her case, she was in significant pain when she came in, so certainly that may be contributing to this respiratory alkalosis. And then last, we'll look at whether or not we have another metabolic process going on or our delta-delta. So our anion gap, as you mentioned, was 30. If you're a subtraction person, then if you got rid of her anion gap and brought it down to 10, you would bring her bicarb up from 16 to 36. So she would have a metabolic alkalosis. If you're a delta-delta or a division person, then her change in her anion gap over her change in the bicarb is greater than 2. So this would also point you to a metabolic alkalosis in addition to her anion gap acidosis. And this metabolic alkalosis may be from her significant vomiting.
Awesome. So this is not a straightforward case, but she has likely a mixed metabolic acidosis, respiratory alkalosis, and metabolic alkalosis altogether. So the metabolic acidosis is likely from some combination of her elevated lactate and hypoperfusion, but perhaps also an element of AGMA from other acids that initially weren't sent for, such as ketosis. And this respiratory alkalosis might have been, for instance, from her abdominal discomfort. And then from a metabolic alkalosis standpoint, as you mentioned, this could be just from the loss of protons from vomiting. This is wonderful. Thank you for walking us through this schema. I think applying a framework is always helpful for all of us. Before we wrap up, can you share a few pearls for us?
Absolutely. So with any acid-base disorder, first you want to figure out, do you have an acidemia or an alkalemia? Then check for your primary disorder. Figure out if you have an anion gap or non-gap acidosis. See if the compensation is appropriate or if you have an additional disorder beyond what you were initially thinking. And then if you have an anion gap acidosis, check with your subtraction method or your division method, aka the delta-delta, to see if you have another metabolic disorder. And remember, just always go through these same steps every single time, and I promise you'll be able to tackle every acid-base disorder you come across. And then last, when you have an anion gap acidosis, remember your Goldmark mnemonic. If you're an internal medicine resident, your attendings will love you for remembering this. And if you're a peds resident, we'll probably actually give you a gold sticker for it.
To be fair, I think adult residents would also like a gold sticker. But before we wrap up, the last point that I'll make, in addition to the many very thoughtful teaching points you shared throughout this episode, is primarily that for me, acid-based disorders have always felt very challenging, but what provides a lot of reassurance, remembering that I can always look up the compensation formulas, and in clinical practice, the number one thing is to recognize that there may be derangements in acid-based status, apply it to the clinical context, and then attempt to address the underlying disorder that might be causing these abnormalities. Dr. Gomez, thank you so, so much for your wisdom. Thank you for your time in the last few episodes. It's been such a pleasure to learn from you. Listeners, thank you so much for listening to Run the List.
You stay salty, Run the List.